which I'll talk about a little bit later on. But anyway, the professor for that course ended up leaving UC Santa Barbara to go help start some search engine. And everybody's like, oh, this guy's dumb. We already have Yahoo and InfoSeek and whatever else was around back in 1996. And that search engine ended up being Google. And he
Hold
ended
on a
up
second.
Being
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
You okay? You all right? I'm working on it. I'm also doing an interview. Sorry.
Sorry.
No, yeah, you good.
He ended up helping to start Google. He was the vice president of engineering at Google, Urs Holtz. Yeah, not a very good teacher, but apparently a smart businessman. But yeah, you know, a lot of these things, you would literally have to just dive into it and stay there, and you would have to think like a computer. That's what helped me get through these courses, because I literally was trying to think like the computer was thinking. And trying to, you know, take input and give output exactly how a computer would do it. And you know, that definitely helps. Because engineering is tough. Computer science is very tough. But the key is that it's tough during school. But if you really learn your stuff when you're out and you have that, you know, bachelor's of science or you know, a BA or whatever you get in computer science, getting a job is going to be a lot easier on average than it is than if you got, you know, maybe something in other degrees or other realms, right? So computer science, I still get offers from people today, you know, Facebook wanting to interview me, Microsoft, all the big guys, all the way down to like small, you know, niche boutique firms are trying to get me in the door. And I'm like, you know what, that was a while ago. I left in 2008 and just never looked back.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I was going to rewind and say about the inception and the story about how I Love Being Black started, because I was actually in college.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Okay. Yeah. So went to UC University of California, Santa Barbara, 2.7% black. Right. So as you can imagine, there's not many of us around. Maybe 400 or 500 black people around, and that's on paper. You wouldn't actually see that many black people around. So we did anything and everything to hang on to our blackness and our cohesiveness as a community, doing things collectively, which ended up, you know, being a silver lining, because every time you would see a black person, you'd be so happy to see them. You would speak every single time. Every single time you would speak. You know, sometimes we would even miss class just because we saw other black people and we wanted to, you know, talk, and we weren't getting that. So, you know, something got created called Black Wednesday. And every Wednesday, the black people would just kick it, and we would just talk. And, you know, some people would miss class. Some people would go to their classes and then come back after class. We would always get our stuff done, you know, classwork and all that stuff. You know, you didn't have to go to class to get the classwork done sometimes. But, yeah, you know, and we would also have static with other people, other communities, and even within our own community sometimes, I ended up creating this phrase, I love being black. You know, people would treat us like if you had one wish, you would wish to not be black because it's so hard and so this and so that and whatever. And, you know, I said, you know, don't get me wrong. We go through things as a community. We deal with stuff, but I love being black. And one of my buddies was there. He was like, say that again. I said, man, I love being black. And that just evolved into my thing. My saying on campus, I eventually put it on a T-shirt and wore it around campus. So, you know, I'd love to say that it was some wonderful business move in X, Y, and Z, but it wasn't. It was something that was born out of the necessity for something positive. That's it. We need this. We see enough on the flip side. We see enough negativity in things that are attacking our community, whether they're from the inside or the outside, that we need something positive. We need a positive affirmation of ourselves. And also what it helps do is it helps you to define why you love being black, because it's not going to be the same for everybody, which is also a thing of beauty in its own, because there's so many different reasons. So anyway, I wore the shirt around campus. Black people everywhere on campus were asking me about the shirt, if I could make them one. So I started making them on a real, real low-level, you know, homegrown type of thing. And that sort of blossomed from there. And then one day I looked up, I said, that's my market research right there. Everywhere I wear this shirt, black people want it, and even non-black people, it creates a conversation around it. Some people, they get it right away, non-black people. They would come up and say, hey, man, you know, I really like that shirt, and they would just walk on. So they get it. They understand why I'm wearing it, and they also understand that this is not an attack on your community. It's embracing mine, you know, and that's important. It's of a secondary importance because that's definitely not what this movement is about. The movement is about uplifting us, not teaching them. But it is. I do think it's an important thing for other people also to recognize why we need this. Because if they don't, then they're just going to continue in their ways, which are oftentimes out of ignorance, and them thinking that we're all sitting on a level playing field. And, oh, well, what if I wore a shirt that said, I love being white? That's one of the most common questions that we get on our Facebook page. Yeah, so part of the business now is we create all sorts of different types of clothing, and it all has the same message, I love being black. And we do events. So we set up and we'll sell our apparel at the events, and we have accessories and whatnot. And, you know, we'll market it pretty well. We'll have models walking around in our shirts. You know, people passing out flyers. We'll have kids. We'll have, you know, my mom and dad still come to the events, and they love interacting with people there. And every now and again, someone will come by. Someone non-black will come by. Well, typically non-black will come by and ask one of those same questions that we hear on our Facebook page. Something like, well, what if I made a shirt that said I love being white, and yada yada yada. And one time there was a white woman. I was passing out flyers to people, and she walked by, and she just kind of, you know, made one of those noises and said, you know, well, what if I wore a shirt that said I love being white? And, you know, I had heard this so many times, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to respond to this one, you know. And I said, how much time do you have? And she said, well, you know, I have a few minutes. I said, okay, cool. I said, okay, what do you think of when you hear the term white pride or white power? I'm sorry. I said, what do you think of when you hear the term black pride or black power? And this is coming from Oakland, California, by the way. And she's like, you know, I think of, you know, like Martin Luther King and the Panthers and, you know, what they did for the community here and da da da. I'm like, okay, good. Now, what do you hear when you hear the terms white pride and white power? She said swastikas, KKK, skinheads, neo-Nazis. I said, okay, good. I think that's what most people are going to think of. Now, do you see any difference between those two? And it wasn't until right then that she actually looked at the definitions of those and was like, whoa, those are completely different. And I said, yeah, you know, on paper, it looks like these are exactly the same. But one, you have a controlling, oppressive power on one hand. And on the other hand, you have the people that are oppressed. So on one side, you have something that's necessary. And on the other side, you have something that's not necessary. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, you like terms like white pride and white power, those have been run through the mud. You know, in a perfect world, sure, we'd be able to say any color, pride, any color, power, and it'd be all the same, but this is not a perfect world. People that came before you, racist, systemic racism that was created before you is the reason why terms like this are soiled. And then I went on. I said, you know, also that even the term white and black, you can't put that on the same plane. I was like, you could say Irish, you could say French, you could say English, you could say a lot of different things, but you choose to group yourself into this term, this umbrella term called white. I was like, the term black, we said that because we didn't know if we came from Nigeria, Ghana, Ivory Coast. We didn't know if we came from any of these places because of this thing called slavery. You've heard about that, right? And she said, oh my gosh, yeah, I have. You know, she really just kind of like, it was like my words hit her physically. Because she took a step back and was like, oh my gosh, I knew all of these things. I just hadn't put it all together like this before.
So you know, it's interesting. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I said, you know, this, some people that haven't put it together may look at this I Love Being Black movement and think that it's an anti-white movement, but it's not. this is a pro-black movement. This is something to lift us up. It's not something to tear you down. You will never see on our page, we hate white people. We, you know, we want this stuff to happen to them, all this kind of stuff, because that's not what this is about. This is not about that at all. This is about rebalancing the scale. That's what it's about.
Okay, that's excellent. I was going to ask you, it feels like you're saying that the collective, what people do when they say that, they're talking singularly. They're usually saying, well, what if I, you know, it's always I. Well, what if I made T-shirts? And what if I said, walked around the street saying, I love white women? But what you're interesting me, I just got from what you're saying, I didn't think about it until you just said it when you talked about the fact we come from all these different places, that the collective, or people like say the diaspora, is fractured. And so this is our collective rejoining, coming together, like a big hug, you know, a big embracive hug, versus you just saying, I love being black. I love being, you know.
Right.
And so the I is not singular in the I. You know what I mean? It's like the I is embracive of we, you know. But you can't speak for everybody else. You can only speak for yourself. Therefore,
exactly.
You're speaking for the collective, but as yourself. Okay. So I'm just having like a moment of clarity. Like,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And that's essentially what it is. You know, we, even though it's an I love being black, what I'm doing is I'm affirming that there are things to love about being black. So then you take that and you can apply it to many. Even the term black, you know, instead of saying African-American, that's why we don't say I love being African-American. Because guess what? Jamaican brothers and sisters were moving here, immigrating here, and guess what they were getting treated like? Exactly the same as us. So it didn't matter that they were of a different nationality. Racism doesn't care about your nationality, right? So they were getting treated the same. We said, you know what? We are under a similar umbrella. We do have similar histories. So that's why we roll it up. I love being black. Of course, that's no disrespect to anyone else's specific culture or anything like that. We respect all cultures, black inclusive or not, you know, and because they do have different histories, but we also have a commonality being black people, and we need to recognize that.
Excellent. That is excellent, bro. Thank you. That is a blessing. Okay. Next question is, do you remember how you got to the first 100,000, the 100,000 likes, 500,000 likes, and then a million?
Yeah. a lot of hard work and sweat and reading through statistics and writing my own apps and things like that. I started out writing apps for MySpace, actually, before Facebook was even around.
Wow.
Yeah. I figured out that Google PageRank, you know, Google ranks every web page 0 to 10. And one of the biggest part of the algorithm in that ranking was the inbound links. So how many people are linking to your page? And what I found out was Google was considering the different MySpace pages as different web pages instead of, you know, another permutation of one MySpace page. So they were all individual pages. So what we did, we wrote some scripts to kind of go out there and write things on people's walls, and they would always include a link to our page, ilovebeingblack.com. And so we looked up, and we had a page rank of 6, which is really high for a little small shop to have a page rank of 6. You know, our page rank was better than a lot of different universities and large, you know, organizations and stuff like that as a 6. And at one time it was even a 7.
Wow.
So yeah, you know, that's where we started, was on the MySpace realm. And then, you know, things happened on Facebook. And when fan pages came out in 07, 08, which is when we created our page, I said, you know what, this is going to be huge one day. This is going to be really big one day, because I knew MySpace was going down. Their structure was horrible. You could do anything you want. You could even write code on MySpace, and that's terrible.
Tell our listeners for a second, from a techie standpoint, putting on your computer science hat, Why is it not, you know, a lot of people talk about Facebook, well, they don't let me do this, they don't let me do that. Why is that not a good thing for you to own a social network and allow the users to write their own code on top of the social network?
Well, so it's, there's a couple different reasons for that. The main one is because there's so many different security holes that it opens up. If you let people write code, people will undoubtedly figure out how to write little snippets of code or how to write code that writes code, which is one of the scripts that I wrote, which would force something to go viral, essentially, and end up on other people's pages. And also, just as a design aesthetic, you don't want, you know, sparkly graphics being pulled in from all sorts of different pages and X, Y, and Z. And, you know, let's say I make a graphic that's sparklygraphic.gif or something like that, and it's a nice heart with a bunch of sparkles, and there's a million people using it. And then one day, all I have to do is make my own I Love Being Black animated GIF and replace it with sparklygraphic.gif because they're pulling it in from that URL. So now a million pages are displaying my logo immediately, all at once. You know what I mean? And so that's you can do sorts of all sorts of different things like that. And then, you know, the JavaScript and the HTML mixed in. It's just a bad idea. Facebook is very smart to learn from the mistakes of MySpace. Very, very smart.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
When you got to your 500,000 mark, was that at that point that you realized, I could see a million, no problem? Or was it still like, well, I got to get to 555. You know, I got to get to 572. You know, like, you know, or did it just kind of like come where it's 500,000, 600,000, 700,000? One day you woke up and you looked, it was 900,000. Like, all right, the million's right there. I can do this, no problem. Let's push hard.
Well, the funny thing is, we hit, I think, 10,000, no, maybe it was 5,000 or so. And I sent an email to a friend of mine that had been, you know, supporting us all the way through. Her name's Natasha. I said, hey, Natasha, yo, at this rate, we're going to hit 500,000 fans in like 6 years. And I kind of, you know, like, you know, 10 years or whatever it was. I think it was like 10 years. Because I had calculated out, you know, the rate of growth and all that stuff. And she said, you know, she probably hit back with an LOL, that would be amazing or something. 500,000 fans, that'd be crazy. So then we looked up, you know, a couple years later, and we were over a million fans, you know, in 2 years. And she ended up, I had forgotten about that email. She forwarded it back to me and said, here's to being wrong. You know, it was amazing. So, yeah, right. I mean, after a certain point, it was just rolling. And especially after we did our press release for a million fans, literally mm-hmm. we were gaining 11,000 fans a day net every single day mm-hmm. after at a million fans. So every
11,000 fans a day. Wow.
A day. Yeah. And this was for over a year. We averaged
now
11,000 fans a day.
When you put the press release out, did you put it out to the black media? Did you put it out on Facebook? Did you not go the typical route, a regular media route? You know, because you're already such a juggernaut online, did you have to go through the regular channels to get the media to take notice of you as an online entity or online business?
Well, since it was a first, we were the first black page to hit a million fans, we felt like it was important to go the traditional route, you know, press release and all
okay.
that stuff. I actually tried to write the press release myself and showed it to a publicist friend of mine, and she just ripped it apart. So I said, all right, you know what? I'm going to pay you, and you write it.
And that's what's important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You have to, you know, you definitely want to go with experts. You don't want to try to do everything yourself.
Well, no, I mean, even in a friend situation that she was honest enough to give you
yeah.
that feedback. I think that's
yeah.
an important part, that you surround yourself by people who are honest enough with you to give you the feedback that you really need, not just like, oh, okay, that was good. Congratulations.
Yeah, it looks great.
Right.
That's how you end up with so many people that can't sing on all those singing shows, you know. Their friends are telling them,
right,
you sound great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, she got out the red pen and inked it up and said, you need to change all these things and more. Really, just let me write it for you. I said, you know what, here's a check. Go ahead and do it. So she did it. We got it out to the Black Press. And, you know, it went out on a lot of different pages. A lot of people ran it. Even there's a site called Bossip.com that ran it,
uh-huh.
And someone said, oh, you're on Bossip. I said, oh, no, because, you know, normally Bossip, if you're on Bossip,
right,
it's not a good
thing. Not a good thing.
Yeah, but I went to the article, and it was positive. They ran it almost as is. They changed a few things and ran the story. I said, wow, that's great.
Everybody wants you to run a story because, you know, they know you have a million followers. So they're like, if I do the story, you know, so of course by then, you know, have to almost run the story. And at that point, I don't even know if Boston probably had, you know, 500,000 or 40,000. Because you remember, websites, not only were you the first page to do it, but I want to venture and say, you were the first Black anything to have, you know, over 100,000 at that point. You know, forget about a million.
Yeah.
They didn't even have 100,000.
Yeah, we're definitely an early pioneer in that. And even Mashable has mentioned us twice, which, you know, I follow Mashable for a lot of the tech and social media-driven strategy type of stuff. So that's been a big help because we get a good push from them as well when they mention us.
Right. Well, that's what's up, man. Really appreciate you, you know, giving us your time. I have two more questions, and I think it's more, well, actually it's three questions, but I think you talked about your passion somewhat. But how hard is it for you to take time off and enjoy your success, and what is something that you like to do that you are able to do?
You know, one of my favorite quotes is, do something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. So for me, I take that almost 100% at face value. You know, almost. There are some things that you definitely want to separate yourself and just do some non-work stuff. But for me, even my work most of the time at least, it doesn't feel like work because I never lose sight of my goal. I never lose sight of that sunny day that I'm trying to create, you know, and uplifting Black people and getting us back to the place from whence we came, you know, and waking a lot of people up and also continuing to wake myself up in the process. And, you know, our team, I have a really strong team of people that, you know, we're very driven in what we do and we're very purposeful in the things that we do. And, you know, we have this global lens. So, yeah, I definitely take time out for myself, for loved ones, for friends and family and, you know, doing the things that are important in life outside of I Love Being Black's mission because I don't want I Love Being Black's mission to be my only mission in life. You know, I want to be able to eat an ice cream cone and not have to think about whether or not I'm eating vanilla or chocolate. You feel me?
Side comment or question about that is that when you go to eat ice, do you sometimes feel like this is going off record, but sometimes I feel like a superhero, you know, and I like, do I put my superhero outfit on today? Or because, like, when you go to eat the icing cone, if you're wearing an I Love Being Black t-shirt, dude, you can't eat the icing cone. Or you can eat the icing cone, but you know you're going to have a conversation. So it's like, do you decide some days, like, you know what, I'm not doing a t-shirt today. I need to be another regular brother, you know, a regular, ordinary Black man, not super Black man.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the doors that you go in, you have to be cognizant of what kind of costume you're wearing going into that door, right? So you might get treated a certain way or talked to a certain way or whatever. Sometimes I don't even want people to know I'm American, depending on where I am.
Right.
You know,
right,
and I
want
to see how I'm treated. We were in Haiti last year in May, and, you know, I would keep my mouth shut and just, no, I'm sorry, I was in Dominican Republic, and,
it Haiti, too. I call it Haiti, too. They hate that when I call it.
Yeah, well, you know, we went to both, but I went to DR first, to see how, just to see how I would get treated. You know, I'm standing in line. I'm just going to be quiet until it's my turn to say what I want, you know, at the restaurant or something. And, you know, this white dude would just go and jump right in front of me in line. And I'm, like, literally a foot behind the person in line, so there's no big space or anything like that. And I'm like, excuse me, you know, I'm in line. I know you see me here. And I'm sorry. And he looked at me surprised that I'm speaking English. So he's thinking I'm Haitian, and he can treat me like that.
Right.
So that was a good teachable moment for him.
And,
you know, so sometimes you definitely have to be cognizant of what you're wearing, who you are, the energy you're putting off, everything like that. And even in regular times when I'm here and not traveling, you know, I want to put off the right vibe, you know, and if it's so bad, I have to think about the things that, like, I'm doing or the things that I'm eating in the name of I love being black, you know.
I totally agree with you.
Or doing that, someone could try to paint me in that light or paint me in this light or something like that. So,
brother, you know you have pork on your fork, brother.
right. I knew it. Look at him.
I try to make sure that
everyone knows where we stand on things.
Right.
Everyone knows
right.
what this is all about, so no one is going to, you know, I don't want to just be one face in front of the black people and one face in front of the white people. No, I want white
right.
people to know where we stand as well, you know.
Yeah, and I think this is the first time that I could actually, you gave me something to think about, and I'm going to ponder it over the next couple of days. I'm going to write something up about that. Just from my perspective, I love him. I love black women, because it's like, I think it's something I carried around for probably since I started wearing the shirt, but it's definitely something that I want to let go of, because I let the brand go. Some different type of brand is coming up, so it's you know, time to put that to bed. But I got a lot of flack from white women. I mean, a lot. and then down south, the white people in general don't understand the shirt. They just don't get it. They're just angry. They just hate the shirt, man. Down here, they just, whew. So D.C., it was interesting, because in New York, it was mainly the white women. But in D.C., it was white and male and female. And then down south is the white family.
Uh-huh.
Whole entire family, grandma, grandfather, the whole family. So, you know, it's going to be my letter to the world of what I love black women really meant and what it didn't mean, but why you took
right.
it that way.
Right.
That's
important, because some people don't even realize why that message is important, not only to black women, but to other black men as well. You know what I mean? And you know, how and the feeling that you're trying to instill in a black woman by wearing that shirt, of course she's going to see it and smile right away, because she knows what it's about.
Right. And what's funny is the white women that smiled also, they had black, you know, I can tell they have black friends.
right.
Yeah. They're like, they get it. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't pushing them away. It wasn't nothing to do about them. It was all about me embracing. But, okay, so we got two more questions, and let's go. Are we going to talk about the web app or no?
Yeah. I mean, we can talk about the whole traveling realm in general. So,
okay.
For a while now, we've had, and I'll lead up to the web app. But for a while now, we've had a very global focus. Ever since I took I Love Being Black International and said, you know what, we can't just focus on things that are happening here in the U.S. We have to try to have a more global lens. You know, there's no way to talk about everything that's going on everywhere, but we do have to infuse more of that, A, because there's not just black people in the U.S., of course, and B, because we need people to care about black people in other places as well that may not have the access to freedom of speech or may not have the access to media that actually goes somewhere and does something as we do here in America. Mm. So we're definitely on the pedestal for not just us, we're on the pedestal for everybody. And so we began to travel more to a lot of different places. So far we've been to 33 different countries in the last 5 years. You know, 8 of them last year. And some of them we return back to pretty frequently. And we're definitely having a greater focus on Africa this year. We've been to East Africa. We did Kenya, Tanzania, and Ethiopia so far. We're doing South Africa and Zimbabwe in May, and then we're potentially doing West Africa if we can get the right funding for it in later this year, September, October-ish. And somewhere along the way in all this traveling, I realized, you know what? I'm really good at this, because sometimes we get funding and sometimes we don't. And when we don't get funding, that doesn't mean that we can't go. It just means we have to be smarter about how we go, how we get there, the prices that we're paying for tickets, the accommodations, things like that. And I began to get really, really good at travel, finding deals, what they call mileage hacking. And last year I started to do seminars on all of this stuff, you know, and people have been loving it. And so they've been, you know, requesting that I do more. So I actually have one next week on Thursday, on April 2nd, from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're doing one called Travel More, Spend Less. It's going to be here in Oakland, California, but we're also streaming it online throughout the world as well. I don't know if you want me to give you the link for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Let me see. You could just go to the I Love Being Black Facebook page and see it. You're definitely going to be able to save thousands of dollars on, you know, on your airfare and things like that going forward. And this is going to be a series, so this is just the next one in the series. Also, I ended up creating an app called What's the Deal. This app, essentially, you put in your airport, the month of the year, and then the region of the world that you want to fly to. And it's all easy. The region is just a drop down, like Asia, Africa, Europe, South America, Central America, on down the line. And it will find the best deals from your location to that region of the world during that month, and it will return them in a format that's really easy to read and really easy to consume and find out which one is actually the best, because it'll rank them as well for you and let you know how good of a deal it is. So that app is just about done, and we're actually going to debut it next week on Thursday. We haven't really told people that, but I'm telling you now that we're going to do that next week on Thursday and debut it for people.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, love the fact that. where should people tell them where they should go to get access to the app? Should it be I Love Being Black Facebook page or...
Yeah, you know, for now, so we're not really giving out the URL just yet, but
okay.
I Love Being Black Facebook page.
Stay tuned to I Love Being Black Facebook page for updates to get the secret URL.
Okay. So if you want the URL to the application that we're going to have that's going to give you these cheap travel deals, stay tuned to the I Love Being Black Facebook page, and we'll be posting that up there very soon. Some of my passions in life, one of them, of course, is traveling. I love traveling. I love seeing new cultures, eating new food, learning new histories, and helping other people to learn about this location as well. You know, we go back and forth to Brazil pretty often, and a lot of people thank us because they're like, you know what, we didn't even know black people were in Brazil, because every time we see Brazilians on TV or whatever, they look a certain kind of way. Light, you know, light skin, straight hair, this and that. You know, we don't really see these black Brazilians that you guys are putting on your Facebook page. So that's one of the things that drives me, one of the passions that I have for traveling, is just letting other people know about this information. If you want something bad enough, the whole world will conspire to give it to you.
That's great.
That was Paulo Coelho. What was the name of the book?
I want to say The Secret of Magic. No, not Magic. Travel. I know what you're talking about. That's what I took my tongue to. Oh, God.
Alchemist. The Alchemist.
Yes, The Alchemist, right. Magic.
Yeah.
Magic.
It's like, if you want something bad enough, the whole world will conspire to give it to you. Paulo Coelho, he's a Brazilian author. The Alchemist, you know, one of the world's best-selling books. That was an amazing book. And after reading it, you know, it sort of helped get some of my passions in line with the next steps and what I need to do and the outlook that I need to have on my life. That's an amazing book. For those of you who haven't read it, definitely go read that book. Yeah, and all of Malcolm Gladwell's books as well, if you want to read about that kind of stuff.
Excellent. All right, brother man. That was Kumi Raouf from ilovebeingblack.com. Shout out to Kumi for giving us the time as he travels the world, making time for our interview. Doing great things. Follow him on I Love Being Black on Facebook, which has 6.1 million people as part of the community. Or check out their website, ilovebeingblack.com. Next up is Lamar Tyler. And Lamar is talking about the gatekeepers are gone. This is Motivational Monday, and I want to make sure we leave the show with some motivation for you guys. So stay tuned to these two separate messages about the gatekeepers are gone. Have a blessed week.
The gatekeepers are gone. You're not working hard enough. Work hard.
I'm Lamar from The Gatekeepers Are Gone, and today I'm excited. I have this extra energy about me. You know, I'm pushing my Tyler Me Media. I'm pushing my Black and Married with Kids brand. I'm pushing my movies, and you know what it is? It's doing it. It's Crush. I'm not talking about Orange Crush. I'm not talking about Gary Vee's book Crushing, which I enjoy. I'm not even talking about the Cold Crush brothers. What I'm talking about is Crush. C-R-U-S-H. Can't rest until something happens. Crush, that's the anxious energy that you get when you've gotten a glimpse of what your dreams are and a glimpse of those dreams to come true. It's that anxious energy you get when you finally taste a little bit of success. You know, and it's just the opposite. Some people taste success and they figure, you know, I made it, I've arrived. And then it's the people that get that crush. That crush is that anxious energy where you say, okay, I've been working 2 years, 4 years, 5 years to get to this point. I've been waiting for my blog to get to this point. You know, I've been writing this book and it's at this point. I've been making these songs and they're at this point. Now what I realize is that the gatekeepers are gone. What I realize now is that I got that crush. I got that nervous energy. I got that can't rest until something happens energy. And what am I going to do with it? I'm going to take that to get to the next level. Crush! When you get that crush, it just opens up your creativity. You know, when you get that crush, you can't sleep at night. When you get that crush, you laying up in the bed all night thinking of new ideas. Coming up with creative thoughts. Coming up with creative creations. Coming up with creative concoctions. You know, whatever you want to say, however you want to put it. That's what the crush does. It gets you amped. It gets you excited. It gets you ready to hustle. It gets you ready to grind. And you just think of new ways that you can do what you're already doing the best way possible. New ways that you can take these products you've already made and get them out to the market because the gatekeepers are gone. Crush. C-R-U-S-H. Crush. You might have just got the crush when you realize that the gatekeepers are gone. You might have got the crush when you watch one of these videos we do every week. Crush. You just can't rest until something happens. You're just going to keep grinding. You will not stop. You get that little bit of success, that little bit of notoriety is all you need to know that you're on the right path. And that crush is what gets you from the quarter way mark to the finish line. You don't care what the haters are saying. You don't care what people are saying against you. You don't care when they say it can't work. Because you've seen a glimmer of hope in it. You've seen some of the success. You don't care that if anybody else is on one side, you're on another side. You don't care that nobody's in your niche but you. You don't care that there's somebody, you know, in your niche taking the position that you've already claimed is yours. Because you can't rest until something happens. That crush is what elevates you to another level that nobody else is willing to do. When you're still running everybody else's tide, people want to know how you do things. Well, the reason you do things, the reason you can push to the next level is because of that crush, because you can't rest until something happens. Crush! And the thing with that crush is when you feel it, you got to harness it. You know, you got to use it. That crush can be your motivator. That crush can be that thing that has you keep blogging when you don't feel like it. The crush can be the thing that, you know, when you tapped out, you ready to just tap out from blogging. You know, it pushes you over to Facebook to engage your audience over there on your fan page. It pushes you to Twitter to engage people on Twitter, to form new relationships, because you realize that every aspect of business is based on relationships. You know, if you want to be a blogger, if you want to be a author, if you want to be a musician or a filmmaker, whatever, every aspect of business is based on relationships. Relationships with partners, relationships with your fan base. And that's what that crushes the energy that you need. Man, when you got crushed, you don't need a Red Bull. When you got crushed, you don't need vitamin water. You don't need throttle. Man, that crush is your throttle. You know, I like it. I might do it when I'm driving. But for my business, I can't do it. I don't need it because what I got is that crush. Crush! You cannot rest until something happens. They will not stop blogging no matter how tired they are. You know, when they done with their blog, load up the last post for the night so they can auto-run the next day because they picking up kids and got to get to work early and doing this and doing that. They still pushing over to Facebook to engage people so they can create and have more fans on Facebook. They still going to Twitter to form relationships because they understand that every aspect of business is built on relationships. They understand that being a filmmaker, that being a musician, that being an independent author, that being a blogger, everything you can name is built on relationships. And that crush is what fuels them. That crush is what keeps them going. That crush is the motivator. That crush is that thing that keeps you awake at night. You know, that crush has you laying in bed with ideas just running through your head where, man, I can't sleep because I got the crush in my body. Man, if you ever see me and my eyes aren't red, something is wrong. My dreams are too close for me to stop. You know, when you get that crush, you have to realize that there's nothing in front of you that can stop you. I have to keep pushing. I need this. My family needs this. My community needs this. My readers on my blog, they need this. You know, and so I cannot rest because that crush unleashes your creativity. You know, when you feel like that crush, all ideas just start to spark in your brain. Those neurons and electrons or whatever, man, I didn't major in that in college. All those different things going on in your head, they just start to go crazy because the crush. You know, I mean, everybody wants to talk about cream. The crush is what gets you to the cream. Crush is that thing that has you doing all the things that the other bloggers won't do, that the other writers won't do, that the other musicians won't do, but you're willing to do it because you can get on with it. You're willing to do it because you know your future is at stake. That crush can't rest until something happens.
The gatekeepers are gone. You get enough sleep, you're not working hard enough. Work hard.
My name is Lamar Tyler of Tyler New Media, and I want to introduce you to the Facebook Commandments. You know, I just want to run down 10 simple, easy things real quick that you can do to enhance your Facebook fan page. You know, people saying, Lamar, you're motivating us, but I need more skills, I need more tools. And normally I say that for speeches, I say that for consulting, things like that, but I'm going to give out these 10 quick nuggets for free. These are 10 fan page commandments. Number one, it's your name. Your name is your real estate on the web. Just like in real estate, they say location, location, location. Your name is your location. Your name is your prized property. It's all in the name. Will your fan page name go viral? If it's the name of your company, it better be good. If I see Joe likes Acme Inc. or Joe likes social media dudes to get money, which one am I going to like? The name is that important. It's all about relationships, just like any type of business. People with fan pages that can refer their fans to your page. People that have a lot of Facebook friends that can suggest their friends to your fan page. Advertise. Yeah, I said it. Advertise. Learn how to use Facebook ads to target your niche. Cap off your ads at a certain amount of dollars per day. Push people inside of Facebook to your fan page. Put a widget on your site. Facebook gives you a widget for a reason. Use it. Enough said. Contests on your site or your blog. Have people like your Facebook page as a requirement. I don't see this getting done enough. Just ask your fans to invite their friends. Engagement. I want to have a back and forth conversation. I just don't want to see you post stuff all the time. Give me something to do. You caught my attention. Now what will you do with it? Consistency. Give it to me every day. Give it to me every hour. Let me know that you're always there. Content. Content is still king. Give me links. Give me pictures. Give me videos. Whatever your market niche wants, that's what you have to supply. People are there for a reason. Same as number 7. Engage me. I'm here, now what? Just getting somebody to like your Facebook fan page is just the first step. You've got their attention. And what you do with it will determine the success of your fan page. Ask them what they want. Ask them what they want to see. Ask them if you're doing a good job. You know, provide content to them. Ask them what content they'd like to see. Just give them a back and forth relationship. Give them a community so they know it's not always somebody talking to them, but that they can have a back and forth conversation. What can you do with that? What kind of relationship can you develop? You know, what kind of fan base can you really develop? Can you cultivate? That initial work you got to get them to the fan page, now what will you do? We've been able to do is cultivate relationships so that people know us and they know our brand through the fan page. What we've been able to do is take online events offline and have events around the country where the fan page is the number one direct way that we market. Not the radio, not television, but the Facebook fan page. What we've been able to do is start a movement using the Facebook fan page. What we've been able to do is provide a service to our community through our Facebook fan page. So those are the 10 fan page commandments. Just 10 nuggets, 10 things to get you real quick, to get your juices flowing, to give you ideas on how you can spark a revolution through your Facebook fan page. Mark Zuckerberg, we salute you.
We'll talk to you guys next week.